The stories of people achieving unusual success despite all manner of handicaps never fail to capture our attention. They're inspirational, to be sure, but they're much more than that if we study them closely. The boy whose legs were terribly burned and who was told he'd be lucky to ever walk again becomes a champion track star. The woman, blind and deaf, becomes one of the most inspirational figures of the century. And the poor children, who rise to fame and fortune, have nearly become commonplace. In this age of unprecedented immigration, we read and see on television examples of people who arrived in this country without any money and without knowing a word of English, and who, within a surprisingly short time, have become wonderfully successful. In fact, the typical Korean family that has emigrated to the United States during the past 20 years has a higher average income than the average American family that was born and went to school here. Now, how does that happen? Freedom, personal liberty, is the most precious thing on earth. It is also one of the rarest, hence its great value. People who manage to get to America, despite mountainous problems and miles of red tape, often find themselves free for the first time in their lives. It's a joyous, wonderful experience for them. And in this newfound freedom, they set to work to find a place for themselves. They go to work serving their new country and its people. Time means nothing to them. But being free to pursue their own ends in the richest, freest country on the planet is everything. They all go to work, and they work hard, and their work is excellent, first class, as good as they can do it, and it's priced fairly. You don't see them marching, demanding higher pay or shorter hours. All they want is the opportunity, and once that's theirs, they make the most of it. In New York City, a Korean family managed to buy a small convenience grocery store in Midtown Manhattan. The first thing they did was clean it. It sparkled with cleanliness. Then they stocked it with everything they felt the people in their area wanted in the way of things you find in a grocery store. They were open early in the morning. They stayed open late at night. They never failed to smile and give a friendly greeting to their customers. Naturally, they became wonderfully successful. They were open 7 days a week. One day, customers coming to the store found it closed, and on the door was a sign giving the reason why. It read, "We've gone to Yale University to watch our son graduate." That's an American story. The true story of people who found joy in freedom and in the opportunity to serve their fellow man and make the most of it. What sets these people with such vast handicaps, such as not knowing the language, not knowing the right people, not having any money? Or the boy with the burned legs who becomes the champion runner, or a Helen Keller, blind and deaf? What in the world is the answer? The answer, if fully understood, will bring you and me anything and everything we truly want, and it's deceptively simple. We touched on it in our last message. Perhaps it's too simple. The people we've talked about here and the thousands currently doing the same thing all over the country are in possession of something the average American doesn't have. They have goals. They have a burning desire to succeed despite all handicaps. They know exactly what they want. They think about it every day of their lives. It gets them up in the morning and it keeps them giving their very best all day long. It's the last thing they think about before dropping off to sleep at night. They have a vision of exactly what they want to do, and that vision carries them over every obstacle. This vision, this dream, this goal, invisible to all the world except the person holding it, is responsible for perhaps every great advance and achievement of humankind. It's the underlying motive for just about everything we see about us. Everything worthwhile achieved by men and women is a dream come true, a goal reached. It's been said that what the mind can conceive and believe, it can achieve. It's the fine building where before there was an empty lot or an ancient eyesore. It's the bridge spanning the bay. It's landing on the moon. And it's that little convenience store in Midtown Manhattan. It's the lovely home on a tree-shaded street and the young person accepting the diploma. It's the new baby in its mother's arms. It's a low golf handicap and a position reached in the world of business. It's a certain income attained, or amount of money invested. What the mind can conceive and believe it can achieve. We become what we think about. And when we're possessed by an exciting goal, we reach it. That's why it's been said, be choosy, therefore, what you set your heart upon, for if you want it strongly enough, you'll get it. Amen to that. It's been said that Americans can have anything they want. The trouble is, they don't know what they want. Oh, they want little things. They want a new car. They get it. They want a new refrigerator. They get it. They want a new home, and they get it. The system never fails for them, but they don't seem to understand that it is a system, nor that if it'll work for a refrigerator or a new car, it will work for anything else they want very much, just as well. Perhaps that's best. People come in all shapes and sizes and with goals of infinitely varying specifications, if they have goals at all. Once a person fully and emotionally understands that the goals that are important to him or her can become real in his or her life, well, it's like opening a jack-in-the-box. All sorts of interesting and exciting things begin to happen. Quite often we become truly alive for the first time in our lives. We look back at our former lives and realize we were shuffling along in a kind of lockstep, that we were actually taking our cues from those about us in the unspoken assumption that we're all alike. When nothing could be farther from the truth. We are not all alike. Each of us is quite different, with different abilities, different genetic profiles, different wants in life. What will wonderfully satisfy one particular family and represent complete success for them would be considered failure for another family, all because of their different aspirations, their different plateaus in life, the difference in their lifestyles, upbringings, education. Every facet of our environment as youngsters has an effect upon us and helps to set our course in life. The youngster who knew poverty as a child might aspire to be rich. He might overcompensate because of the desolation of his youth. While another young man raised in an upper-middle-class family who always had just about everything he wanted might settle for a very middle-class adulthood. Things we've always had aren't as important to us as they are to those who have been without them. We talked about freedom on the preceding message and how dear it is to those who never had it, while most Americans take it for granted and never even think about it. If you ask most Americans what the most important thing in the world is for a human being, chances are they'd seldom come up with freedom. Yet as Archibald MacLeish wrote in his fine play, The Secret of Freedom, the secret of happiness is freedom, and the secret of freedom, courage. To understand the subject and the importance of goal setting, we have to realize that it's the very basis of any success. It is, in fact, the very definition of success. The best definition of success I've ever found goes like this. Success is the progressive realization of a worthy goal, or in some cases, the pursuit of a worthy ideal. If you give these definitions some thought, I think you'll agree with me. Success is the progressive realization of a worthy goal. That's a beautiful definition of success. It means that anyone who's on course toward the fulfillment of a goal is successful. Now, success doesn't lie in the achievement of a goal, although that's what the world considers success. It lies in the journey toward the goal. We're successful as long as we're working toward something we want to bring about in our lives. That's when the human being is at his or her best. That's what Cervantes meant when he wrote, "The road is better than the inn." Quite often romantic stories end with the loving couple getting married. That's just the beginning of the real story. When the young person stands before his school's president or principal and receives the diploma, that's called commencement. That's the beginning. It's an important milestone, to be sure, and congratulations are certainly in order. But where are you going from there? Once a person has realized the goal for which he or she has so assiduously toiled, that's wonderful. It's time for a rest and some self-congratulations, time to savor the achievement. But we're no longer successful, by my definition, until we set a new higher goal toward which to work. We're at our best when we're climbing, thinking, planning, working, when we're on the road towards something we want to bring about. I don't mean by this that we should become workaholics. Far from it. In fact, it's been well established that the most successful men and women manage to live in a wonderful state of balance, with lots of recreation. Take that word recreate apart when you've got some time and you'll find it interesting. And they get lots of rest. The mind works best when we're properly rested, and our minds are the best and most important parts of us, regardless of what we choose to do. Did you ever hear an athlete say, it's about 90% mental? Whatever the percentage really is in a good game of golf or tennis, it's very large. As we pointed out in the magic word, our mental attitude can make all the difference between winning and losing. With our definition, success being the progressive realization of a worthy goal, we cover all the bases. The young person working to finish school is as successful as any person on earth. The person working toward a particular position with his or her company is just as successful. If you have a goal that you find worthy of you as a person, a goal that fills you with joy at the thought of it, believe me, you'll reach it. But as you draw near and see that the goal will soon be achieved, begin to think ahead to the next goal you're going to set. It often happens that a writer, halfway through a book, will hit upon the idea for his next one and begin making notes or ideas for a title even while he's finishing work on the one in progress. That's the way it should be. One of my favorite poems is by Rabindranath Tagore, the distinguished Calcutta poet, and it goes like this. I slept and dreamt that life was joy. I woke and saw that life was duty. I acted, and behold, duty was joy. We are at our very best, and we are happiest, when we are fully engaged in work we enjoy on the journey toward the goal we've established for ourselves. It gives meaning to our time off and comfort to our sleep. It makes everything else in life so wonderful, so worthwhile. Most people, when they think of the word success, tend to equate it with lots of money. Sometimes that's a natural part of the goal and tells us how well we're doing, but not always by any means. Success is whatever we want it to be, that is worthy of us. That's why I commented earlier that success may also be defined as the pursuit of a worthy ideal. For example, I can't imagine anyone being more successful than an outstanding teacher who's striving to know more about the art of teaching and the subject matter that will catch the interest of his or her pupils, who understands that every student is different and learns at a different rate of speed. Joy and satisfaction come to us from serving others, and there are literally millions of ways of doing that. For those whose goals involve the serving of great numbers of people, chances are they'll be richly rewarded indeed. In fact, for many, a goal is a certain level of income or a certain amount of money in an investment account. A goal is an individual thing, as individual as the person, him or herself. Since no two people are exactly alike, it stands to reason that no two of us will have exactly the same goals. One thing a goal must do, however, is fill us with positive emotion when we think about it. It must be something we want very much to bring about. The more intensely we feel about a goal, the more assuredly the idea buried deep in our subconscious will direct us along the path to its fulfillment. I once used the quotation, "No one gets rich without enriching others." I received a letter from a man in Utah who wrote, "How about those who get rich in the drug trade, or those who produce and sell pornography? How do they enrich others?" It was a good question, especially in these times. I wrote back to him and told him that my definition of success is the progressive realization of a worthy goal. Certainly people in the drug and pornography business would not qualify as successful. What they're doing is counterproductive, destructive, and involves, in the case of drugs, the enslavement and death of thousands. And I went on to say that while our needs are few and relatively simple, our wants, in this incredibly affluent society, are virtually endless. By meeting those wants, whatever they may be, we serve others, not always to their benefit, nor to our own. Nor would I call those in drugs and pornography successful, nor do their riches amount to much if they're apprehended and sent to prison. But I did stop using that quotation. It is possible to get rich without enriching others. But for most of us, it's not the way we want to go. It's nothing to take pride in. Why bother when there are so many positive, excellent, and productive ways to serve others? But whatever our goal happens to be, if we stay with it, If we're fully committed to it, we'll reach it. That's the way it works. It's estimated that about 5% of the population achieves unusual success. For the rest, averages seem to be good enough. Most seem to just drift along, taking circumstances as they come, and perhaps hoping from time to time that things will get better. I like to compare human beings with ships, as Carlyle used to do. It's estimated that about 95% can be compared to ships without rudders. Subject to every shift of wind and tide, they are helplessly adrift, and while they fondly hope that they will one day drift into some rich and bustling port, you and I know that for every narrow harbor entrance, there are 1,000 miles of rocky coastline. The chances of their drifting into port are 1,000 to 1 against them. Our state lotteries wax rich on such people. So do the slot machines at Las Vegas and Atlantic City. They look to luck, but don't seem to realize how steeply the odds are stacked against them. Someone wins from time to time, to be sure, but the odds are still there. But the 5% who have taken the time and exercised the discipline to climb into the driver's seat of their lives, who decided upon a challenging goal to reach and fully committed themselves to reaching it, sail straight and far across the deep oceans of life, reaching one port after another and accomplishing more in just a few years than the rest accomplish in a lifetime. If you should visit a ship in port and ask the captain for his next port of call, he'll tell you in a single sentence. Even though the captain cannot see his port, his destination, for fully 99% of the voyage, he knows it's there, and that barring an unforeseen and highly unlikely catastrophe, he'll reach it. All he has to do is keep doing certain things every day. If someone asks you for your next port of call, your goal, could you tell him? Is your goal clean and concise in your mind? Do you have it written down? It's a good idea. We need reminding, reinforcement. If you can get a picture of your goal and stick it to your bathroom mirror, it's an excellent idea to do so. Thousands of successful people carry their goals written on a card in their wallets or purses. When we ask people what they're working for, chances are they'll answer in vague generalities. They might say, "Oh, good health or happiness or lots of money." That's not good. Good health should be a universal goal. We all want that and do our best to achieve and maintain it. But happiness is a byproduct of something else, and lots of money is much too vague. It might work, but I think it's better to choose a particular sum of money. The better, the clearer our goal is defined, the more real it becomes to us, and before long, the more attainable. Happiness comes from the direction in which we're moving. For example, children are happier on Christmas morning, before opening their presents, than they are Christmas afternoon. No matter how wonderful their presents may be, it's after Christmas. They'll enjoy their gifts, to be sure, but we often find them querulous and irritable Christmas afternoon. We're happier on our way out to dinner than we are on the way home. We're happier going on vacation than we are coming home from it. And we're happier moving toward our goals than even after they've been accomplished, believe it or not. That's why it's so important to set new goals as soon as the current one is realized. And we should never stop this process. All the days of our lives, we should be engaged in moving toward, earning, and looking forward to a new plateau on which to stand, a new goal to accomplish. If you, like so many millions of Americans, don't know what it is you want sufficiently to name as your primary goal, I recommend you make out a want list. Take a notepad. Go off by yourself and write down the things you'd really like to have very much, or do. One might be a beautiful new home, or a trip around the world, a visit to some special country or place. You might be yearning for a sailboat or a motor yacht, or if you're an avid fisherman, you might want to go salmon fishing in Alaska or trout fishing in New Zealand. It might be a business of your own or a particular position with your company. It might be a certain income that will permit you to live the way you'd like to live, or, as I said earlier, a certain amount of money in good investments or in a savings account. How about a special make of car? Or an addition to your present home. Just write down everything you can think of that you would really like to see come about in your life. Then when you've exhausted your wants, go over the list again and number the items in the order of their importance. Then make number 1 your present goal. Listen to this message often, As I hope you'll listen to all the messages until they become a habit and knit way of thinking and doing things. Believe me, the system works. It works every time. Life plays no favorites. If anyone can succeed, and millions do, so can you. Of one thing you may be sure, you will become what you think about. If your thinking is circular and chaotic, your life will reflect that chaos. But if your thinking is orderly and clear, if you have a goal that's important for you to reach, then reach it. You will. One goal at a time. That's important. That's where most people unwittingly make their mistake. They don't concentrate on a single goal long enough to reach it before they're off on another track, then another, with the result that they achieve nothing, nothing but confusion and excuses. I started looking for the so-called secret of success when I was 12 years old. I read every book I could find on the subject. I studied psychology and sociology. I studied the great religions of the world, and I read the world's greatest philosophers. And all of a sudden, many years later, I realized that in the hundreds of lives I'd studied, in the countless books I'd read, a plain and simple truth had kept appearing. It's believed that no one can learn anything until he or she is ready for it. And apparently I was finally ready, in my late 20s, to finally see for the first time the secret I had searched for so long. It was simply this. We become what we think about. You see, you are at this moment the living embodiment of the sum total of your thoughts to this point in your life. You can be nothing else. Similarly, 5 years from now, you'll be the sum total of your thoughts to that point in time. But you can control your thoughts. You can decide upon that on which you wish to concentrate, about what you think about from this point forward. And you will become that. You will realize that goal as sure as anything on earth can be sure. That's why having a goal toward which to work is so very important. It gives our minds a focus and our lives direction. By thinking every morning, every night, and as many times during the day as you can about this exciting single goal we've established for ourselves, we actually begin moving toward it and bringing it toward us. When we concentrate our thinking, it's like taking a river that's twisting and turning and meandering all over the countryside and putting it into a straight, smooth channel. Now it has power, direction, economy, speed. Several billions of human beings would give anything they have to enjoy the freedom and personal liberty you and I take for granted, to have the right to choose their work and their goals, to enjoy our bountiful standard of living, our educational system, to know the peace and privacy of our homes, and to have laws which protect the citizen rather than persecuting. We have it all. Yet in the midst of our plenty, millions lead unhappy, aimless lives. They live in tiny prisons of their own fashioning. These are the people who don't know that each of us, each one of us, not the economy, or fate, or luck, or the breaks, each one of us is in charge of his or her own life. Each one of us is completely responsible. As Carlyle put it, the person without a purpose is like a ship without a rudder. Have a purpose in life, and having it, throw such strength of mind and muscle into your work as God has given you. He also said, a person with a half volition goes backward and forward and makes no way on the smoothest road. But the person with a whole volition advances on the roughest and will reach his or her purpose if there be even a little wisdom in it. And Munger said, there is no road to success but through a clear, strong purpose. Nothing can take its place. A purpose underlies character, culture, position, attainment of every sort. So decide upon your goal. Insist upon it. Look at your goal card every morning and night, and as many times during the day as you conveniently can. By so doing, you'll insinuate your goal into your subconscious mind. You'll see yourself as having already attained your goal, and do that every day without fail, and it will become a habit before you realize it, a habit that will take you from one success to another all the years of your life, for that is the secret of success, the door to everything you will ever have or be. You are now, and you most certainly will become, what you think about. All creatures at birth are supplied with everything they need for successful survival. All creatures except one are supplied with a set of instincts that will do the job for them, and because of that, they don't need much of a brain. Take the magnificent bald eagle, for example. My wife and I saw dozens of them on a recent fishing trip in Alaska. To see one of them come swooping down and pluck a live and sizable fish from the water on a single pass is astonishing. More astonishing still is the eagle's eyesight. And because of its need to see small rodents moving in the grass from high altitudes or a fish just inches under the surface of the water, its incredible eyes take up just about all of the space in its head. For the eagle, its eyes are the most important thing, and everything else works in unison with them. Its brain is tiny and rudimentary. It doesn't think or plan or remember. It simply acts in accordance with stimuli. And it's the same with most other living creatures. Even the beautiful porpoise with a much larger brain and the chimpanzee are easily tamed and taught. Only one takes 20 years to mature and has dominion over all the rest and the earth itself, and has today the power to destroy all life on earth in a couple of hours. Only one is given the godlike power to fashion its own life according to the images it holds in its remarkable mind. Everything fashioned by human beings is a result of goal setting. We reach our goals. That's how we know that the diseases that plague us will be conquered. We've set goals to eradicate every disease that plagues us, and eradicate them we will, one by one. We have never set a goal that we have not reached, even landing on the moon, or are now in the process of reaching. No one ever made a purposeful accomplishment without a clear goal toward which to work. I hope you've established yours and that you've begun to think about it frequently every day to impress it into your mind, particularly your remarkable subconscious, where forces greater than we can imagine can come to your aid. For a moment, consider the things your mind has brought you. Everything you have, your work, your relationship with your family and others, your philosophy of life, all come to you as a result of using your mind, your religion. Now consider the estimate made by experts. You have probably been operating on less than 10% of your mental capacity, and probably much less than that. In an article for the Saturday Review, our old friend Herbert Otto, psychologist, educator, and chairman of the National Center for the Exploration of Human Potential, reminded us that many well-known scientists, such as the late Abraham Maslow, Margaret Mead, Gardner Murphy, O. Spurgeon English, and Carl Rogers, subscribe to the hypothesis that man is using a very small fraction of his capacities. Margaret Mead quotes a 6% figure. Herbert Otto writes, "My own estimate is 5% or less." Neurological research has shed new light on man's potential. Work at the UCLA Brain Research Institute points to enormous abilities latent in everyone, by suggesting an incredible hypothesis. They said the ultimate creative capacity of the human brain may be, for all practical purposes, infinite. To use the computer analogy, man is a vast storehouse of data, but we have not learned how to program ourselves to utilize these data for problem-solving purposes. The following appeared in Soviet Life Today, a USSR English language magazine. It said the latest findings in anthropology, psychology, logic, and physiology show that the potential of the human mind is very great indeed. As soon as modern science gave us some understanding of the structure and work of the human brain, we were struck with its enormous reserve capacity, writes Yefremov, eminent Soviet scholar and writer. He continues, "Man, under average conditions of work and life, uses only a small part of his thinking equipment. If we were able to force our brain to work at only half its capacity, we could, without any difficulty whatever, learn 40 languages, memorize the large Soviet encyclopedia from cover to cover, and complete the required courses of dozens of colleges." End of quote. That statement is hardly an exaggeration. It's the generally accepted theoretical view of man's mental potential. Now, how can we tap this gigantic potential? It's a big and very complex problem with many ramifications. But as Herbert Otto points out, it's clear that persons who live close to their capacity, who continue to activate their potential, have a pronounced sense of well-being and considerable energy. They see themselves as leading purposeful and creative lives. The way most people use their minds can be compared to the time back in the early 19th century when just the eastern coast of the North American continent was settled, just a strip along the east coast. To the west stretched the raw, undeveloped great bulk of what was later to become the incredibly rich 90% of the economy. 90%, which resulted in the standard of living enjoyed today by Americans. If everything you have is the result of using just 5% of your mind, consider for a moment what it will mean to you and your family if you can increase this percentage. This cassette will show you how to use infinitely more of your mental powers, how to develop some of that more than 90% virgin territory. None of us, as a rule, has the slightest notion of the real capabilities of his or her mind, but believe me when I say that your mind can be compared to an undiscovered gold mine, and it makes no difference whether you're 17 or 70. Look at it this way. Your goal is in the future. Your problem is to bridge the gap which exists between where you now are and the goal you intend to reach. This is the problem to solve. Robert Seashore, then chairman of the Department of Psychology at Northwestern University, pointed out that successful people are not people without problems. They're simply people who've learned to solve their problems. And there you have it. Living successfully, getting the things we want from life, is a matter of solving the problems which stand between where we now are and the point we wish to reach. No one is without problems. They're part of living. But let me show you how much time we waste in worrying about the wrong problems. Here's a reliable estimate of the things people worry about. Things that never happen, 40%. Things over and past that can never be changed by all the worry in the world, 30%. Needless worries about our health, 12%. Petty miscellaneous worries, 10%. Real, legitimate worries, 8%. In short, 92% of the average person's worries take up valuable time, cause painful stress, even mental anguish, and are absolutely unnecessary. And of the real, legitimate worries, there are two kinds. There are the problems we can solve, and there are the problems beyond our ability to personally solve. But most of our real problems usually fall into the first group, the ones we can solve if we learn how. There must be millions of people today who feel they're being barred from the life they want because they look upon problems not as challenges to be met, but as wide chasms beyond their ability to bridge. A little research proves that successful people have the same kinds of problems. One of the very real benefits of working with a psychologist or psychiatrist comes from learning that there are hundreds of thousands, even millions of other people, with problems identical to our own. So the whole thing boils down to a matter not of problems which are common to us all, but to our ability to solve them. Now I'm going to assume you've decided on a goal. Remember, you will become, and you will achieve what you think about. That is, if you stay with it, you'll reach your goal. But how? It's right here that your mind comes into play. What is your mind, really? Nobody knows for sure. Perhaps the best way to describe it is to quote Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Archibald MacLeish. In his play, The Secret of Freedom, a character says, "The only thing about a man that is a man is his mind. Everything else you can find in a pig or a horse." That's uncomfortably true. The human mind is the one thing that separates us from the rest of the creatures on Earth. Everything that means anything to us comes to us through our minds, our love of our families, our beliefs, all of our talents, knowledge, abilities. Everything is reflected through our minds. Anything that comes to us in the future will almost certainly come to us as a result of the extent to which we use our minds. And yet it's the last place on earth the average person will turn to for help. Do you know why? You know why people don't automatically turn their own vast mental resources on when faced with a problem? It's because they never learned to think. Now that is a fact, believe it or not. Most people never think at all during the entire course of their lives. They remember, but that's not thinking creatively or in new directions. They react to stimuli, but again, that's not thinking. Remembering to set the alarm at night and getting up when it rings in the morning does not take thought, nor does showering, shaving, getting dressed, eating breakfast, going to work. At work, we once again fall into comfortable routines. At quitting time, we go home and start repeating the process. Most people, let me say it again, do not know how to think. When they're faced with a problem, they will go to any length to avoid thinking. They will ask advice from the most illogical people, usually people who don't know any more than they do, next-door neighbors, members of their families. Very few of them have reference books. But much more important than that, only one in I don't know how many thousands will take a large notepad, write the problem at the top of the page, and then deliberately turn on his or her thinking apparatus. But some people do think. They do indeed. In order to reflect a moment on the human mind, consider what it's accomplished. As you do, realize that we are developing so rapidly that we've come further in the realm of progress in the past 50 years than in all the preceding 10,000 years of human civilization. Of all the scientists who ever lived, it's estimated that 90% of them are alive today. We've reached in the area of ideas and human advancement a plateau so high it was undreamed of by even the most optimistic forecasters as recently as 30 years ago. But every new idea triggers additional ideas, so that now we're in an era of compounding advancement on every front and in every area that stagger the imagination. The harnessing of the power of the sun in our atomic plants and ships, the speed of light computers, which in minutes save months and years of calculating drudgery. Every man-made thing you see and touch spawned from the most powerful agency in the world, the human mind. Dr. Harlow Shapley of Harvard has said that we're now entering an entirely new age of man. He calls it the Psychozoic Age, the age of the mind. And you, my friend, own one, free and clear. Now let's look at a few facts. The 40-hour week, long standard, is in imminent likelihood of being even further shortened. This means that the average working person has, at his disposal, an enormous amount of free time. In fact, if you total the hours in a year and subtract the sleeping hours, if he or she sleeps 8 hours every night, you'll find that this person has about 6,000 waking hours, of which less than 2,000 are spent on the job. Now, this leaves 4,000 hours a year when a person is either working or sleeping. These can be called discretionary hours with which that person can do pretty much as he or she pleases. So that you can see the amazing results in your own life, I want to recommend that you take just 1 hour a day, 5 days a week, and devote this hour to exercising your mind. You don't even have to do it on weekends. Pick 1 hour a day on which you can fairly regularly count. The best time for me is an hour before the others are up in the morning. The mind's clear, the house is quiet, and if you like, with a fresh cup of coffee, this is the time to start the mind going. And here's one good way to do it. During this hour every day, take a completely blank sheet of paper. At the top of the page, write your present primary goal, clearly, simply. Then, since our future depends upon the way in which we handle our work, write down as many ideas as you can for improving that which you now do. Try to think of 20 possible ways in which the activity that fills your day can be improved. You won't always get 20, but even one idea is good. Now remember two important points with regard to this. One, this is not particularly easy. And two, most of your ideas won't be any good. When I say it's not easy, I mean it's like starting any other habit. At first, you'll find your mind a little reluctant to be hauled up out of that old familiar bed. But as you think about your work and ways in which it might be improved, write down every idea that pops into your head, no matter how absurd it might seem. Let me tell you what will happen. Some of your ideas will be good and worth testing. The most important thing, however, that this extra hour accomplishes is that it deeply embeds your goal into your subconscious mind, starts the whole vital machinery working the first thing every morning, and 20 ideas a day, if you can come up with that many, total 100 a week, even skipping weekends. An hour a day, 5 days a week, totals 260 hours a year and still leaves you 3,740 hours of free leisure time. Now, this means you'll be thinking about your goal and ways of improving your performance, increasing your service. 6.5 full extra working weeks a year. 6.5 40-hour weeks devoted to thinking and planning. Can you see how easy it is to rise above that so-called competition? And it'll still leave you with 7 hours a day to spend as you please. Starting each day thinking, you'll find that your mind will continue to work all day long. And you'll find that at odd moments when you least expect it, really great ideas will begin to bubble up from your subconscious. When they do, write them down as soon as you can. Just one great idea can completely revolutionize your work and, as a result, your life. If you want to develop the muscles of your body, you take daily exercise of some sort. The mind is developed in the same way, except that the returns are out of all conceivable proportion to the time and energy spent. The mind of man can lift anything. His muscles, even the best developed, are puny alongside those of some of the dumbest animals on earth. If man had depended on his muscles for survival, he probably would have disappeared, as did the dinosaurs, which were, incidentally, the most physically powerful and most successful creatures that ever lived. Let me give you just some of the results people have reported to me as a consequence of following this one-hour-a-day routine. An office equipment salesman sold more of his company's product in 1 month than he informally sold in an entire year during the 4 years he'd been with his company. A Sunday school teacher with 5 pupils set a goal of 30 pupils. Her last letter told me she now has a class of 25. She's almost reached her goal. I've used this system for years, and it's given me some of the most gratifying and rewarding experiences of my life. And it costs only 5 hours a week. 5 hours out of 168. Is it worth it? It's like spending 5 hours a week digging in a solid vein of pure gold, because your mind is all of that and much more. Each time you write your goal at the top of the sheet of paper, don't worry or become concerned about it. Think of it as only waiting to be reached, a problem only waiting to be solved. Face it with faith and bend all the great powers of your mind toward solving it. And believe me, solve it you will. You know, this puts each of us in the driver's seat. Now let's briefly recap. 1. This week, start spending 1 hour a day getting as many ideas as you can. Try for 20 a day on ways to improve what you're now doing. Don't become discouraged. Remember, the achievement of your goal very likely depends upon it, as does your whole future. Once you start exercising your mind in this way, I know you'll want to continue the practice. 2. If everything you now have is the result of using, say, 5 to 10% of your mental ability, you can imagine what life will be like if you can increase this figure to 20% or more. 3. Successful people are not people without problems. They're simply people who've learned to solve their problems. 4. Don't waste time and energy worrying about needless things. 40% of them will never happen. 30% have already happened and can't be changed. 12% are needless worries about our health. 10% are petty miscellaneous worries, and only 8% are genuine. Try to separate the real from the unnecessary and solve those which are within your ability to solve. 5. The human race has advanced farther during the past 50 years than in all the preceding 10,000 years of human civilization. We're now living right in the middle of the golden age man has been dreaming of and praying for centuries, and it's going to get better. Last of all, the only thing in the world that can take you to your goals in life is your mind, its effective use, and following through on the good ideas it supplies you. Each of us has a tendency to underestimate his or her own abilities. We should realize that we have, deep within ourselves, deep reservoirs of great ability, even genius, that can be tapped if we'll just dig deep enough. It's the miracle of your mind.
This is the end of side 4. Please fast forward the tape to the end to cue up side 3 for your next listening.